Outstanding. Thank you, Patrick. I appreciate the opportunity to be here this morning and to lead off the discussion for the next 2 days and kind of, introduce some of the physiological principles that underlie the management and the other topics that will be talked about for the next 2 days. I have to admit to you, it's a little bit of a daunting task to do this morning because Dr. Mike Smith has done this traditionally in several years past. And if you know Dr. Smith, you know that he has both a high intellectual prowess for the principles that we'll talk about today, but probably as importantly, or maybe even more importantly than that, he actually can apply that type of knowledge into managing reproduction to improve the reproductive performance of a cow herd. He does it on his own herd, does it across a lot of states, and does a lot of consulting. So I am, like I say, it's a daunting task, but proud to be stepping in for Dr. Smith this morning. He was kind enough to give me a lot of information and kind of go about to tell me how he goes about presenting this type of material to set up the conference for the next 2 days. I'll do it a little bit differently, just a little different style, some of the same concepts and maybe some different concepts as well. If you've been to many of the past conferences, then you'll know that you'll see that some of this is a little bit different, maybe just from the angle of attack would maybe be the major difference. First thing I want you to do, though, this morning is everybody take out your agenda for the next 2 days, okay? You should have it in your red bag when you checked in. Take your agenda out. One of the things that I'm going to do as I go through this discussion this morning is point out where there are talks in the next 2 days that address or that are underlined by the physiological principles that I'll discuss here, okay? When you see a name in green on the slide, that indicates that one of the individuals that will be talking to you later today and tomorrow will be covering something that's on that slide or the concept that's on that slide in general. Okay, so just make notes. It's kind of choose your own adventure if you want to look at it that way. I think what you'll find, though, as we go through this morning and you mark down the talks that you really want to key in on, things that I say that maybe ring a bell with you that you need to think more about, or do a little bit differently on your place, you'll find that you end up marking all of them. It's a very well put together conference schedule, and I think you'll enjoy it. Okay, without any more discussion on that, let me just jump in and talk about the physiological principles underlying success to reproductive technologies. Now, again, one of the differences between what Dr. Smith has done in years past is that this is not just about success to artificial insemination. I'll also put in some other technologies that these principles have an effect on too. But the first thing we need to think about is how we measure our success in reproductive management. You know, we all really love to, after we do a round of AI or embryo transfer, we like to go to the coffee shop or to the feed store or somewhere and say, you know, I got 70% pregnancy rate to AI or 70% conception rate. What does that all really mean? And is that what we should be measuring? Now, sometimes we'll spend a good amount of time talking about the differences in the concept of pregnancy rate and conception rate, but basically for the way we're doing artificial insemination these days, there's not a tremendous amount of difference with timed AI, but certainly to some of the other technologies, we'll need to talk about that a little bit more specifically. One of the other things that I want to bring out right now and through the rest of the discussion, though, are the management practices or the management benefits from applied reproductive technologies outside of just genetics. Okay, so that's the first thing we go to when we think about AI or ET or IVF, that we think about we can rapidly improve the genetics of our commercial herd, our purebred herd, whatever we're working with. But outside of that, I think there are some things that we don't emphasize enough. Some benefits that in some cases may even be more impactful than the improved genetics that go along with that. Calving distribution is certainly one of those. I'll spend some time at the beginning here talking about calving distribution, how calving distribution affects what the physiological principles are that underlie your success to an applied reproductive technology, and then I'll go back again at the end of this and excuse me, and also wrap up with that. But again, just on measuring, when you get into this mindset of producing beef cattle as a food commodity, and I think that's the way most of us would approach it, measuring not just pregnancy rate or conception rate or calving distribution, but really in the end, what we need to be looking at the very least is pounds of calf weaned per cow exposed, whether you're purebred or commercial. But if you can boil it down even further than that to pounds of calf weaned per acre or per unit forage production or per unit cost. Okay, so that's really what we want to get to as we talk about, you know, having an effect on all this. And to not leave economics unsaid, if any of you have ever read anything by Ludwig von Mises, who's a great Austrian economist, he always said that economics is too important to leave to the economists. Okay, so I'm not an economist, but I think that's an important part of what we need to look at here. And again, one of the management improvements that we see from all of these reproductive technologies is the shift forward in calving distribution. Most all the time we see that. And if you think through the economics of gaining or losing a cycle in your production dynamics, and you go through all the math and give it $1.50 a pound, you look at a difference in $63 per return to that unit, to that cow or that heifer, that we miss by missing a cycle. Very simple principle, but I think, again, something we need to keep in mind is we not just think about the genetics improvement we make by these technologies, but also the management improvements that we make through these technologies. Okay, to me, the place to start in talking about the physiological principles that underlie whether or not you're successful to an applied reproductive technology is anestrus. Okay, there's two types of anestrus, and when we say anestrus, we're just talking about a period of time when that female cattle, cow or a heifer, is not exhibiting estrus cycles. Okay, there's two types of anestrus that we focus in on mostly, and that is postpartum anestrus. After that cow has had a calf, the point of time from when she gives birth until she begins to cycle again, extremely important on impacting whether or not you're successful to these applied reproductive technologies. On the heifer side of that, yearling heifers, there's a period of time before they reach puberty, prepubertal anestrus, when they're not exhibiting estrus cycles. That's mainly what we're trying to control when we're managing cattle to be successful to artificial insemination, embryo transfer, whether those embryos are produced by collation or IVF, whatever the case may be. So this principle of anestrus is where we're going to start, and it's also where we're going to wrap up with a management deal. But let's get a little bit, or try to boil down into the physiological principles that underlie this, and start thinking at least about the incidence of anestrus in beef cattle. These are some data from Jeff Stevenson and Cliff Lamb, kind of put together to look at how often do we encounter this anestrus when we're starting a breeding season of some sort, or a reproductive management technology. And you see that then in postpartum cows, usually we do a decent job of getting many of those cycling before we start that next breeding season, but there's still a good number of cattle, of cows, mature cows, that aren't yet cycling. Okay, so when we get down into the endocrinology and the physiology of this, we'll talk about how to get more of those cycling. Or we'll also, the talks following up after this, will give you indications of why the synchronization protocols and management practices we use these days do a better job of getting those cycling. Many of you know that with your two-year-olds, your first calf heifers, wet two-year-olds, sophomores, whatever you call them, that's where we're going to have a little bit more issue with getting cows to recycle, to reduce that postpartum interval or that postpartum anestrus. That's where we're going to have most of our cattle fall out. A lot of that's impacted by heifer development. Plenty of discussion in the next 2 days about heifer development and how to make good cows out of good heifers that are going to be able to get past that sophomore slump and more of those be cycling, not be in the anestrus phase whenever you start those reproductive technologies. Certainly we can manage yearling heifers to be estrus, to have gone through puberty, be estrus, have gone through puberty by the time that we start a breeding season with them. But again, we need to do that in a way that after they have that first calf, they can conceive again and rebreed in the next season to our technologies there. Okay, so now the physiology. That's a long time. It takes a long time, right, to build up into actually talking about the endocrinology and the physiology of all this. But the hormone, the steroid hormone that I'll focus in on most this morning, that has a huge impact or really regulates the prepubertal and postpartum anestrus is progesterone. Okay, so you'll be able to see Dr. Lauderdale later will be talking about choosing pharmaceuticals, and I'm sure progesterone will come up in that. And progesterone is something that we have as a technology that we can apply through these protocols, the synchronization protocols that help in, improve or reduce the period of anestrus for both heifers and mature cows and two-year-olds as well. So what you see when a calf, and this is a similar principle for heifers before they go through puberty and begin cycling, or for cows that have had a calf before they start to cycle again, that postpartum anestrus. They'll go along. There's a lot of things that govern this, and we'll talk about those in just a second. But after they've had that calf or before they go through puberty, of course, there's not any display of behavioral estrus. But during that time, on the ovaries of those cows and heifers, they begin to slowly build back their ability to grow follicles and make follicles large enough that will produce enough estrogen to trigger an ovulation. And when they trigger that ovulation, set up luteal tissue, then that's whenever they get exposure of that progesterone. The progesterone is important to setting up the timing of the uterus, the pituitary, the hypothalamus. I noticed on one of the graduate student posters out here, a very nice diagram and explanation of that process. I'd encourage you to go look at that, check that out. So that progesterone is important in a lot of different levels anatomically and certainly physiologically as well. But what happens whenever, after that first ovulation, is that a cow or a heifer will have a short cycle, as we call it. They'll have luteal tissue that's not there the duration that it normally would be in a regular estrus cycle. And that short cycle and that short exposure to progesterone is what is extremely important, setting up that timing and then starting those normal estrus cycles. And there's some improvement on fertility in subsequent cycles as well. But really the biggest impact is going to come from this short cycle, that short 5 to 10 days of exposure of progesterone, again at several different anatomical levels, to set up that timing for the net for a true estrus that is displayed estrus, and then a normal length estrus cycle after that. So there are a couple of different ways to get cattle to do that. One is to manage them, and that's what we'll talk about in a minute. Manage them so that they do this intrinsically, that they take care of this themselves and make endogenous progesterone, that they're going to set up this timing themselves. But there are other ways that we can manage them, and that's where, you know, when we start talking about the estrus cycles a bit later, or the estrus synchronization a bit later, that's where that discussion of having progesterone in those protocols, that's why that's so important, not just for success and conception to that AI or that embryo transfer, but success and conception to clean up or subsequent AI and transfer after that. So there's different ways that we can do that. MGA, maybe not the easiest or the most effective from an endocrinological standpoint, but we can also apply PRIDs or CEDARs, intervaginal drug-releasing devices that release the actual hormone progesterone. The MGA, the feed additive, is a synthetic that acts like progesterone when the cow consumes that orally, or heifer. Or we can administer GnRH, gonadotropin-releasing hormone, and we go a step above and affect the pituitary to release. I'm not going to try to throw too many hormones at you this morning because I want you to focus in mostly on progesterone right now and estrogen in a minute. But we can give a dose of GnRH to stimulate ovulation. But that really only works if those cows are what we call, or heifers, are shallow in estrus. They've begun to grow follicles that are big enough to respond to that GnRH injection by ovulating at that point. But we can manage these cattle to give them that short cycle. We do this quite a bit, at least in the Southeast and in Tennessee, for natural service. You know, we're talking about AI and embryo transfer and these advanced technologies, but if you're trying to move into a phase of using these applied reproductive technologies in your herd and you don't have your herd quite right, you know, Dr. Smith, when he would talk about this, talked about selecting or picking and knowing whether your herd would respond well to a timed AI or to an embryo transfer. If you don't have that, you can manage those cattle into that through selection and through application of progesterone to tighten that calving distribution up and give them that short cycle prior to applying that technology, and there are several different ways to do that. So let's talk about those two and the factors that control anestrus, pubertal, prepubertal anestrus. One of those is just age, chronological age. It's important that those heifers reach a certain physiological age, that they have a hypothalamus, a pituitary, ovaries, and a reproductive tract, a uterus that can respond to the timing of setting up those estrus cycles. You know, we've done a very good job, I think, of controlling or improving the age of puberty of our heifers, almost to gone overboard on that. You know, a lot of this is controlled through genetics, very heritable that early maturing sires, as measured by scrotal circumference at yearling, will sire heifers that go through puberty earlier compared to smaller scrotal circumference sires at yearling. And we've stacked those genetics for so many generations that it's not uncommon now when we do trials or breed heifers for producers that we find some 14-month-old heifers that are 7 months bred. They're either conceived to a herd, to a calf crop mate or to the herd bull before he was pulled. So we've really advanced almost to the stage of, you know, used to we thought about Jersey heifers as going through puberty basically when they're born. And we've done a good enough, I think, genetic selection that we can manage these heifers to go through puberty earlier, or maybe we can take an approach of a less intensive input in developing these heifers. There'll be a good bit of talk about that later with Dr. Holland Funston. John Rick will talk about that more in depth in two talks later today. And, you know, we've had this rule of thumb of feeding these heifers to reach 65% to 75% of their mature, what their mature body weight would be. We kind of have to know what their mature body weight's going to be, so we need to have an idea of the weight of our cows. But is that target weight something that we need to focus in on as much? And when they talk about that, remember that what they're talking about is this age of puberty and this having gone through this short cycle prior to the breeding season to set all that up. And certainly genetics, we have a list of folks talking about genetics later that are going to go over this really well also. So factors that control postpartum anestrus. So this is the anestrus of the cows after they've had a calf until they start cycling again. Many, many different environmental factors, and what I have listed here doesn't even cover all those. Calving difficulty. You know, if she had a difficult time having that calf, then uterine involution is going to take a little longer, and just the repair of the actual tract outside of when they set up that short cycle is going to take longer. When you get into nutrition, again, we're going to have a couple of good talks later on nutrition. George Perry and Patrick are going to talk about nutrition, whether it be the plane of nutrition for cattle just before artificial insemination or just after artificial insemination, or anti-quality factors, too much or too little of something. Key in on those talks to think about how nutrition not only affects postpartum anestrus but also embryonic survival as well. Age and parity, we've talked about that with the younger cows. Just days postpartum. And when I wrap up here this morning, I'm going to talk about managing that tighter calving season and trying to get that average days postpartum to be longer when we start to apply these reproductive technologies in the subsequent breeding season. Presence of a calf, there's been a lot of work on that. When I first started in graduate school, that was a big thing that we talked about at meetings like this, was calf removal and being able to trigger that short cycle by removing a calf. Genetics, again, Drs. Allen, Spangler, and Van Inman are going to talk about how genetics affect that. Really cue in on those. I think that's going to be a highlight of the next 2 days, talking about how selection, heterosis, and those things affect reproductive performance through the regulating postpartum anestrus. And then certainly health, we'll have a couple of talks that I'm interested in health management, but also in the types of products that we use for health management and how that affects postpartum anestrus specifically, and even more so than that, embryonic survival and those kinds of things as well. Okay, so what we've done now in developing over the years these synchronization protocols that eventually Dr. Patterson will talk to you about is to develop a protocol where we don't really, that includes in that protocol a short cycle. Maybe that's a good way to say it. An exposure to progesterone so that when we get a number of cows that are anestrous at the start of this synchronization protocol or at the start of this technology, that we can still breed them, whether or not we find them in estrus at the end of that and get them to conceive. And these are some data from Dr. Patterson that were given to Dr. Smith. I took from his talks he's done in previous years of looking at fixed time day eye pregnancy rates to anestrus cows that were anestrus, probably very shallow anestrus at the beginning of that synchronization protocol. And we find that we can be very successful in getting anestrus cows to conceive to fixed time day eye. Control the follicle. I see that Patrick stood up a minute ago, so I'm probably getting close on time. But control of the follicle, extremely important. You've seen this graph. I'm sure most of you have had a lot of discussion about follicular wave dynamics, and part of one of the bigger parts of estrus synchronization are controlling those follicular waves so that we have not just a follicle that is ready to respond to a GnRH injection or to trigger ovulation itself, but being an optimal level of estrogen production so that that affects the quality of the oocyte, that reduces embryonic loss later, then, and also affects the amount of progesterone that's produced from that the luteal tissue, that ovulation. So a tremendous amount of discussion will be centered around control of follicular dynamics, and also the discussion about estrus expression when we are talking specifically about fixed time AI, but some also, I imagine Cliff will mention this, on embryo transfer and managing the recipients. But having a good display of estrus, and you see that the timing of these, and when you when we start talking about split time day eye, these are all principles that are set up to manage around or to help control the timing of estrus expression, and when we breed or transfer relative to that estrus expression. So very important principles to think about here. Gamete and embryo quality. Again, there will be discussion later of a panel on gender selection and the quality of those sperm cells that have gone through that process and handling. Dr. Stroud will talk about process and handling of frozen semen and embryos as well. We'll have some discussion of IVF and managing recipients and collecting oocytes from that. Also, embryos and the, you know, being able to pick a certified practitioner. Maybe the way to sum up this slide is to find reputable purveyors of these gametes and embryos. Okay, so when you look at selecting a place to buy your semen, go to one of the big, one of the big artificial insemination companies that have a track record, a history of providing a good product. At very least, an NAAB or CSS certified collection facility. When you compare the fertility of semen collected from fertility success of pregnancy establishment to semen collected from custom collection processors, there's a very distinct difference in both the variability and just the quality of that semen versus one of the bigger studs. So think about that, and also the same kind of concept when you have oocyte collection and also embryo collection transfer. Think about the sire. These are some work that Dr. Hall is here. He worked on, he was on this, and Dr. Wedderman on this study. Dr. Poehler, who will talk to you later tomorrow, I think one of the last discussions, he's talking about pregnancy diagnosis. But we're doing some work also investigating how sire affects fertility, not only to fixed time AI, but also to embryo transfer and IVF, and how we can do a better job of identifying those sires that will give us more success to this. Again, a physiological principle that we don't always, you know, think about controlling because we spend so much time on genetic selection, but something that can certainly have an effect on whether or not we're successful to that. Pregnancy survival, embryonic survival, I've talked about some of this as we've gone along, but timing of transfer and control of the uterine environment and health, nutrition. George Perry will talk to us about, again, nutrition pre and post artificial insemination, how that affects embryonic or pregnancy survival or pregnancy loss, however you want to look at that and quantify that, anti-quality factors as well. Ronaldo, Dr. Cook, will be talking to us about temperament and stressors that can affect pregnancy and success to these technologies, and that would be certainly an effect on both sides, but also through pregnancy survival. So I'm probably really close on time, but I wanted to wrap up, being as we are in Iowa, I thought I would wrap up with a picture of corn. And not just a picture of corn for corn's sake, but I would like to encourage you, to, as we go back to talking about managing calving distribution and its effect on all these other physiological principles, and then through those an effect on whether or not we get cows bred to these or settled to these technologies. Think about it as a commodity, right? If I was a corn producer, some of you may be row crop producers as well as cattle producers, if I were to go out and plant a field of corn and I took the planter and did the hedgerows and then I parked the planter for 2 weeks, and then I came back and did a couple of passes, and I parked the planter again for a week, and then I go get the planter a week later, and I make a couple more passes. Nobody's going to do that, right? Unless you're producing what we call roasting ears or sweet corn. You might do that on purpose. But for what we do in commercial cattle production, seed stock production of cattle that are going to go into commercial environments or progenerate crossbred offspring that go into commercial environments, if you think about this as managing a crop, and that's why we call it a calf crop, and getting those as tight as possible, then that, to me, is the single most important management practice that lets us do good on everything else. So back to the corn analogy. If I have that corn staggered out in different growth phases, there's no really one good time for fertilization, no one good time for weed control, pest control, and it's the same kind of principle in managing cattle, cow-calf production, whether it's seed stock or commercial. If I have calves spread out over a long window, a long period of time, then I can't do a good job of applying health protocols or applying nutrition in the correct way and feeding cows for their growth or their production cycle in the right time. So I would encourage you to think about it this way. And if you think about it that way and think about how having a tight calving interval affects your average days postpartum when you start a reproductive technology with synchronization for fixed time day hour, for embryo transfer, or for IVF, then it'll have a very distinct effect on the days postpartum. All that stuff I talked about earlier that affects whether or not they've started or done with their anestrus period. If I go through these three examples and I have all three yield a 90% pregnancy rate at the end of a breeding season, but I either just steadily get some, 30%, 30%, 30% over three cycles. I have an example here where I don't get many early. This would be a failed reproductive technology or no technology at all. But by the end of the breeding season, I still get my 90% pregnancy rate. Or if I do a really good job with time day eye and get two-thirds of my cows or heifers bred early to the in the first cycle and shift that calving distribution up and then kind of clean that up in the next two cycles, or even just be done after this first cycle or the second, I still get the same pregnancy rate, but what that yields is, on average, cows that are further postpartum. So we've overcome all these other physiological effects that negate success to an applied reproductive technology. Okay, and it doesn't mean that all your cows will be that way. We still have some that are kind of coming in late, but we still apply these technologies to them because it's more of a long-term game. In the interest of time here, I'm going to pass that second visual, but say that this is it's a long-term game. It's not just a single-year analysis of how well we do to a fixed-time day eye or an embryo transfer. It's about using that as a building block, as a follow-through to the next season. Because even if I apply these synchronization protocols that yield a lower than desirable fixed time day eye pregnancy rate, I'll still likely shift that calving distribution forward with the cleanup sires or the second insemination. And then if I do that, then I really affect that average days postpartum in the next year of applying that technology. And as I get 2 or 3 years out, that's where we really get to that sweet spot of having that great success of getting a lot of cows settled to that fixed time day hour, that application of technology early on. Okay, so focusing again, if somebody asked me what the single most important management practice is in cow-calf production, you know, you can talk about health management and nutrition and all those things, but what really allows us to do that effectively and do it in a way that has a positive effect on reproductive performance to these technologies is having as tight a calving distribution as we can, as short of a calving season as we can, 45 days, 40 days, maybe one cycle with your heifers is the way a lot of us are doing it these days. So think about that as affecting these other physiological principles. So take-home message, manage heifers to reduce the number that are still in prepubertal anestrus, manage cows to reduce the number that are in postpartum anestrus when you start these technologies. And we need to have this kind of a crop, calf crop kind of mentality when we approach this. Again, whether you're a seed stock or commercial producer, that'll help us eventually be as successful as we possibly can with the environment we're given to work in to these technologies. We need to procure high quality gametes and embryos, however depending on what technology you're using, and consistent management follow through. Remember that this is years built on years built on years, and the folks that are so successful at time day hour, embryo transfer, now IVF, are ones that stuck with it. Even if you had a bad year starting out the first time, you stick with it and you build on that and improve your success over a number of years. So hopefully that gives you an indication of what I think are the most important physiological principles that underlie your success to reproductive technology and the management practices that control it. And again, the rest of the today and tomorrow will be specifics that go toward that. And if you keep these principles in mind, I think those will be a little bit easier to understand and how they fit in your environment. Okay, so with that, Patrick, I'm not sure if I have some time for questions and discussion. Go ahead. Looks like I've left a little time for questions and discussion. Good. Being the first presenter, I wanted to make sure that I don't get anybody off track. The first time us extension guys, we have a tendency to get long-winded if we don't stick to the plan here.